It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And Cecil, a lot going on this year. We're coming to the end of the absolute end of tax filing, I think October for personal policies. And I know that you have an issue you're going to be talking about today. Right. So good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. Lockwood, let's talk about estate-related taxes.
Wow.
There are several taxes that lurk, if you will, in the area of estates. And this will become more evident as we have our discussion this afternoon. But there is really more confusion about these taxes than there is actually, if you will, taxation. And that's kind of an interesting sentence to start off with, but I think it will become more clear. Okay, let's begin here, Lockwood, with what is a step-up in basis. Mm-hmm. And this is just so very important that our listeners understand this. I would say that every single day, 5 days a week, we get a call, at least one, sometimes more than one. Tell Mr. Harvell I want to deed my house to my children.
Uh-huh.
Tell Mr. Harvell I want to deed the beach house to my granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Tell Mr. Harvell that I have an extra lot that I bought years ago and I want to go ahead and deed it to my son.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a mistake to do a lifetime deed because you lose the step up in basis. And I'm going to explain that more thoroughly in just a second, Lockwood. But I'm always intrigued by what is behind the phone call, please deed my house, please deed the lot, let's mm-hmm. go ahead and deed the beach house. I guess that as we get older, And we're just afraid that if we don't go ahead and get it out of our name, that something is going to happen to it or that it's going to, you know, disappear in some way. There just seems to be a lot of fear and anxiety about allowing our property, land to just and house to just simply pass according to our will.
Right.
And this is the catch, Lockwood. When we own property, the property has a tax basis. That means that's what we paid for the property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we add to our basis by improving the property. So if we bought a lot and we then built a house on it, we would add to our basis not only the cost of the lot, but also the improvement of the home.
Right.
Or if we add a fence or a pool or an outbuilding, any kind of improvement we make to the property, it adds to our basis. But when you deed a property during your lifetime to your child or grandchild or brother or sister, and you do it while you are living, you not only deed the property to them, Lockwood, but you deed them your tax basis.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of deeding them your tax basis, you are in effect disallowing the step up in basis that occurs when one dies and the property goes according to our will. If we wait and let the property go to our son or granddaughter or our brother or sister when we die, then the value of the property is reset. The cost basis is reset. It's like return to go,
mm-hmm.
okay, on the Monopoly board,
right.
Return to go. And the basis is the fair market value on the date of our death. So, you know, let's say that we bought a house, you know, for, like right now I'm dealing with a cute little house down in the Promised Land, Lockwood, here in downtown Morehead City on Shepherd Street. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, you know, that gentleman bought that house for $60,000.
Right.
Okay. Now he's made some improvements. We've maybe got $150,000, maybe even as much as $200,000 of cost basis. Okay. He wanted to deed that property to his son. I put the brakes on that for the reasons that we're discussing now. Well, goodness gracious, the son is about to sell it for $600,000.
Right.
So the son would, if I had not put the brakes on it, the difference between the $200,000 and the $600,000, the $400,000 would be capital gains taxation, and the child, the son, would have lost the step-up in basis.
Mm-hmm.
So be very careful in the estate-related area, Lockwood, of deeding property, gifting low-basis stock. This also applies, by the way, to stock or to any asset. All assets get a step-up in basis. Sometimes grandparents or parents will, you know, give away, you know, X number of shares of Coca-Cola. Well,
right.
They got those shares in Coca-Cola back when they were, you know, 30 years old, 40 uh-huh. years old. Now they're 80 years old. Okay. The basis is very low. So be very careful giving your property away while you're living, because you will affect the tax basis on the property for your heirs.
You know, this is a topic where I know we've talked about in the past in relationship to the concerns associated, I'm making a presumption here, of probate, that some of these instances are folks fearful that this process of probate will be arduous or expensive, when in fact, you've said over and over again, that you've taken the mystery out of probate in North Carolina. And I'm thinking that's probably one of the reasons, is it not, that some people are saying, hey, let's go ahead and transfer this property over to our children or grandchildren or family members. Is that one of the justifications for it?
I think it is. I think that when we ask why, that is certainly one of the answers we get. And again, Lockwood, like, awesome, and we're going to go to a different issue right here in a minute or two, but like so many of these estate-related tax issues, there's just a lot of confusion and misnomer about it. And you're right. You know, probate isn't going to cost us anywhere, you know, nickels compared to
right.
the loss of
yeah.
the step-up in basis.
No,
I mean, the difference between $200,000 and $600,000, that $400,000 at, you know, 30%, my goodness, in this world.
Yep.
You know, we're talking, well, what is that? 30 times 4 is
$120,000. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So probate might cost $2,000, if that.
Right.
But the tax basis, tax man is going to come calling for $120,000. So we can't let the tail wag the dog here.
Right.
We've got to have our ducks in a row. Now, that's another one, real quick.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons we're talking with you, is to get folks to understand, to get organized. And again, I'm just going to make a quick note on this. We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins. And as always, I want to remind you, you can reach out to them at Harvell & Collins. Wes and Cecil and Andrew and all of the staff there. But Cecil Harvell's with us this afternoon, and we're talking with him about estate-related taxes. And if you'd like to get some more information, and one quick note, don't hesitate to give them a call. 252 area code 726-9050. That's 726-9050. Or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, my apologies for interrupting you there, but I wanted to remind folks about the need to get, as you mentioned a moment ago, as you said, get their ducks in a row. Get organized. Do it now. All right. That was one item of estate-related taxes. What were the other items?
Now, here comes the next item, which our listeners just are going to be flabbergasted. I mean, every time I communicate this number, if you will, in my office or over the phone or in a conference to a family, they just almost look at me in disbelief, and they sometimes will say things like, "Are you sure?" And, "Wow, I didn't know that." Mm-hmm. I mean, so few people understand now, Lockwood, that estate tax hits at any estate over $12,900,000.
Wow.
$12,900,000. So let's just round it off. $13 million.
Right.
So Let's talk more about this. What am I talking about? I'm talking about all these words that always get kind of mumbo jumbo: estate tax, death tax, inheritance tax,
mm-hmm.
all of those things that we've heard all our life about. so many elderly folks are concerned about those words: estate tax, inheritance tax, death tax, state of North Carolina inheritance tax. And the bottom line is that unless your estate exceeds this extraordinary number now under federal law, which has been adopted by North Carolina as well, which is currently $12,900,000, unless your assets in your estate, your home, your beach home, your stocks, your bonds, your farm, whatever you own, unless it exceeds that $12,900,000, the fair market value on the date of your death of your assets exceeds that $12,900,000, there just simply, Lockwood, is no estate tax, wow, death tax, inheritance tax. Okay? Now, I want to relate this back because this is what people remember. So many people remember when that number was $600,000. Mm-hmm. It was $600,000 when I started practicing law, and it went up to, you know, $1 million and $1.5 million, and then it went up to $2.5 million, and it has slowly escalated, you know, but quite significantly, for heaven's sakes. I mean, from $1 or $2 or $3 million now up to as much as $12,900,000. So it is sky high now. Okay. $12,900,000. Now, there certainly are folks that have estates that are over that number, mm-hmm, and we can talk about that on a program and what we at our law firm and Andrew Foster, our tax lawyer, can do to help folks who are over that number. And there has also, Lockwood, been a tremendous amount of escalation in the value of things. I read, I think, in your newspaper the other day that this penthouse or condominium on Front Street in Beaufort,
right,
has broken all records by selling it like $2.1 million or something,
right,
for a, you know, just a condo. You know, of course, it is on Front Street; it overlooks the waterfront and all. But it was kind of a record-setting price for something of that nature. You know, so yes, prices have gone up considerably, but the estate tax exemption amount, $12,900,000, is right there, kind of escalating with the cost of with the escalation of property values. Okay, so that's a big one. That's a lot of misunderstanding, Lockwood, around that estate tax exemption equivalent amount, $12,900,000.
Okay, Cecil, a quick question for you. Again, we're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and I do want to remind you again, that number, 252 area code 726-9050. Do not hesitate to call and at least get some information. Cecil, here's an example of one of the questions I would have for you as I'm looking at my estate, and unfortunately, or fortunately, it doesn't get anywhere near that threshold, but regardless, if I'm, let's say, of an individual and I've acquired a lot of properties in North Carolina and other states, and I've acquired a lot of assets, does it not help or hurt periodically to talk to you and say, okay, let's do a quick inventory just to see how I am progressing in my financial conditions, so that if we do bypass that exceed that threshold, then maybe we need to address some other issues. Is it not sometimes worthwhile to just do a quick inventory, as it were?
Well, it absolutely is. And thank you for mentioning that again. Inventories and check marks and looking through again and checking beneficiary designations and looking at your IRA, beneficiaries and things of this nature, Lockwood, are just critically important. I mean, to let all of your information just lay out there dormant, mm-hmm, and not review it and make sure that things are up to date is a real mistake. And let me hasten to say, this number, this $12,900,000, Lockwood, that is the number. But look now, that includes all properties where, right, you have an incident of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So even though an IRA might be $1 million and it has a beneficiary, that's included. Mm-hmm. Or even though, you know, you own a life insurance policy and it is $2 million and it's going to the two children, $1 million each, you own it, that's included.
Okay.
Anything that you have an incident of ownership over is going to be part of the estate tax calculation to come up with what the value happens to be. And so that's very, very important that we know that that's kind of, if you will, the other side of the coin. Yes, 12.9 million is a large number, but also, you know, you would have to look at everything. You know, not just the house, not just, you know, simple things. We have to look at everything.
You've shared something here I hadn't even considered. Again, we're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. Again, that number, 252 area code 726-9050, or online at harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, I hadn't even considered the issue. You know, I was sort of, if you will, spitballing with that question, but I hadn't even considered the issue of life insurance. And by the way, it is not unusual for individuals to have life insurance policies at a minimum of $1 million and upwards to $10 million based on their business relationships and their topics, of, well, concerns related to covering any outstanding liabilities of this nature. And I'm thinking, for example, a term life insurance. Someone might have a term life insurance because they've started a new business and they've wanted to assure that their family is not overwhelmed by the business should the principal die. So it's not unusual for the principal to have a life insurance policy comparable to the value of the company. Am I thinking correctly on that?
No, you absolutely are. You are.
I hadn't even thought about that.
One breath, I'm saying the number is very high.
Yeah.
You know, by most people's judgment, $12,900,000, and yet in the second breath, I'm saying, well, but now look, you better look at everything.
Right.
You know, if you've got a couple million dollars of life insurance and a home that has greatly appreciated at, you know, Emerald Isle or Cedar Point or up in New Bern on the river, you know, and you add, you know, your IRA, your stocks, your bonds, you know, maybe you're pushing that number. And keep in mind, Lockwood, when you're real young like you are.
Thank you.
And you come in, you know, we still got a lot of life to live.
Right.
So if I've got, you know, a 50 or 60 year old, you know, couple in my office, you know, and they're, you know, let's say they're at 9 million,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're, you know, and we're 60 years old. Well, goodness gracious, in 20 years, they may well be pushing that number or over it.
Yeah.
So we do have to factor that in. Sometimes we advise what's known as a disclaimer plan. That's going to be a little bit complicated for today's program, but the bottom line is there is a program. There are documents, if you will, estate planning documents that we do fairly regularly that put into place that if we're over these numbers, then the following occurs so as to mitigate the tax. If we're not over these numbers, then we just keep moving on with distributing the assets to our heirs. Okay. Now, another one, Lockwood, that I just think is good. All of this is, I think, very interesting to a lot of our listeners. We remember that you could give $10,000 a year to any one or more persons. You were allowed to give $10,000 a year each and every year to any one person.
Right.
Now, Lockwood, we recall that this was $10,000 to any number of people. So, you know, if you have three children and you had six grandchildren, six, seven, eight, nine, that's nine people.
Mm-hmm.
Nine times 10 is $90,000. You're able to give this $10,000 to any one person each and every calendar year. Well, guess what, Lockwood? That number is now $17,000. And so few people know this. They are still giving the good old $10,000, and there's nothing wrong with giving $10,000, but it's nice to know that the current law will allow you to give more than that. The current law will allow you to give $17,000 per person per year. That is known as the annual gift tax exclusion.
Now, a question on that. Cecil. Again, Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins with us this afternoon. If I'm giving away the $17,000 exclusion, is the recipient going to be taxed for that, or what is the arrangement? Of course, what you're saying is that it doesn't cost the estate anything to give the money away, if I understand that correctly. But what about the recipient of that that gift?
Well, Lockwood, that is just a terrific question, and I'm so glad that you asked that, because frankly, I don't know that that was on my little to-do list talking points this afternoon, but I'm so happy that you brought that up. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
The government, the Internal Revenue Service, the addition to your question is, well, what if I get the $17,000, is it taxed? But right there with that question is, well, what if I inherit the $12,900,000, is it taxed? In other words, when I get money, either through a gift or either through my inheritance, am I taxed at that point? I, as the beneficiary, I mean, my goodness, if my parents leave me, you know, $3 million, they might not have any tax, but don't I have tax? Mm-hmm. Because I'm the recipient. I'm the person who received the $17,000 or received the $3 million inheritance. Well, you know, Lockwood, let's think about that a minute. The government's not going to wait for, quote, for us to receive it.
Oh, okay.
They're going to take it off the top. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, again, we go back to the $12,900,000. You know, are we giving more than that? Uh-huh. And if we are giving more than the $12,900,000, then we're going to have a problem.
Right.
But if it's under the $12,900,000, then not only is there no tax for the estate, but there's no tax for the recipient.
Got it.
So the $17,000, it's very rare, Lockwood, that there's tax for the recipient of an inheritance, uh-huh, or the receiver of a gift, because after all, the tax is at the gifting level of the donor right out of the gate.
Okay.
That's where the tax would be. And so, no, the $17,000 is received. The inheritance is received. I get this question often.
Uh-huh.
Now, when we go to take it, and we go and take our $17,000, or we take our, you know, whatever it is in our estate, and we invest it ourselves,
mm-hmm,
you know, in a CD at the bank, or in a stock company, you know, with a broker or whatever, and it accrues income. That income that we receive in the next year off of the inheritance that we received or the gift that we received, that of course would be taxable. But that's just income tax, just like we have on everything.
Right.
That's another investment that we have, and it accrues on our 1040. The bank will send out, you know, a 1099, and mm-hmm, the bottom line is that income, the income that we have growth off of what we've been given, would be taxable as ordinary income.
Okay, but the gift itself, from the perspective,
is not taxable.
Another reason why it's beneficial to talk to Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins and the rest of the crew there. HarvellandCollins.com, by the way, there's a website. All right, we're talking estate-related matters, estate-related taxes. Any final items here, Cecil? Because this is one of the things that I'm really impressed with in our conversation is the necessity to look at, as you said earlier, the entire package. Even my life insurance policy comes under my estate. So, you know, a lot of people don't even think that. They think that insurance is outside. I would have thought that. Pardon me.
Well, they think that it's outside, just like a COD at the bank or a stock that's been designated right of survivorship, because it's not passing through the estate. It's passing by beneficiary.
Right.
And but just because it passes by beneficiary does not mean that it's not part of our estate. The test for whether or not it's part of the $12,900,000 is, did we, while we were living, have incidents of ownership? Could we liquidate the account? Did it have cash value that we could get a hold of, like a life policy? Were we the owner of the policy,
right,
so that we could renew it or increase it or take out any value, converting it from term to permanent? Did we have incidents of ownership and in the IRA or in the account at the bank? You know, just because our child's name's on the account and it passes to them automatically, well, guess what? While we were living, we could have gone in the bank, too, and taken the money out.
Now, I'm going to go back to something you mentioned a few moments ago, Cecil. I apologize. But a lot of people, as I mentioned, you said own real estate. And we've had, as a result of acceleration in values, particularly in the coastal regions and in the mountains, you've got people who own a little place up in the mountains. They purchased it for a small amount of money. But because of the accelerated rate of real estate, it now may be worth a great deal more. So sometimes, you know, what we think we own and possess has a certain value. But when it hits an issue of evaluation, could be far and away greater than what we expected. So I think, and I'm walking away from this conversation, if you will, thinking inventory is very important. A regular conversation with you just to review the assets, all of the assets, to determine whether or not and it's conceivable for people to easily exceed that threshold. I apologize for interrupting you, but I'm just very impressed with that fact.
Well, it's absolutely true. We have a lot of clients here in Eastern North Carolina. We tend to see clients, and I know you know this, Lockwood, you know, from Wilmington, New Bern, a lot of New Bern clients, you know, Jonesboro, Arapahoe, Onslow County, of course, Jacksonville. And then we, of course, have, you know, our clients here in Carteret County, of course. But we do see folks generally from Eastern North Carolina, even as far as Rocky Mount, Elizabeth City. Those are all towns that we're meeting with people all the time. You know, the Watermelon families, that's what I call our good friends from the Wayne County area, the Watermelon families. agriculture. And what I'm getting at here is that every now and then you'll have one of these clients that will say, well, I had this track of property in Anger, or I had this track of property in Wake Forest, or this track of property there in Clayton, North Carolina. Well, anything up in that area, anything in the central, moving toward the central part of North Carolina, you know, has just escalated beyond belief. And so you're right, Lockwood, we can get up to those numbers pretty easily, and people need to look at that. They haven't really thought about that. There's a tract of land in Anger, North Carolina, that, you know, my grandfather had, and somehow, you know, me and my first cousin now own, you know, own it 50-50, or own it a third, and it's now worth, you know, $5 million,
right,
or more. Yeah, exactly.
I think to just say
last words, Lockwood, is that I really would like for our listeners to understand this step up in basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's just critically important that we understand that the best thing to do is to hold on to our assets and let them pass according to our testamentary, our will, our trust, whatever, so that our heirs receive a step up in cost basis. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important. And then the last thing is just to demystify and make it clear that for most folks, we are under that $12,900,000. And although we sit at home and worry, you know, on Sunday afternoons with our family about the fact that we're going to lose some of our estate to taxes, it's not going to happen unless for some reason our estates are at or exceed that $12,900,000. And by the way, all of these numbers, the $17,000 gifting, the $12,900,000 estate tax exemption equivalent amount, they are all indexed, and they each and every calendar year, we're about to go to another one here, it's hard to believe, but in 2024 we'll have to talk about you know, these numbers again, because they're slated to increase yet again.
Wow. We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and again, I want to remind you, as we were just talking a few moments ago, planning is everything. And talking with Cecil and his crew at Harvell and Collins, I say crew, the entire team, I apologize, the entire team at Harvell and Collins, will do several things. One, it will facilitate the transfer of assets and just family arrangements, but also it will save money. It will save money. Cecil, as always, thank you for taking the time to be with us. And I'm going to commend, do call Cecil Harvell at Harvell & Collins. That number, 252 area code 726-9050. Cecil Harvell, Wes Collins, and the entire team, they're ready to assist. Or go online to harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, thanks for your time. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Let's talk legal on the talk station. That's perfect.